Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Tim Drake talks with technologist Rebecca Taylor about her recent article in the National Catholic Register on morally tainted products. What are we talking about when we say morally tainted? Well, you're going to find out. Also in our second half, Tim Drake speaks with Register film critic Stephen Gray Donis about The Lorax and the secret world of Ariete and the difficulty in finding good family films. Well, we're going to find out about all that in this edition of Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for the Register. Hello again, Tim.
Greetings, Tom.
Always a pleasure to talk with you, my friend. And, you know, when we talk about a morally tainted product, if I can kind of define this quickly, we're talking about a product that is in the marketplace or perhaps could be in the future that has something in its makeup or its ingredients or its development that is of dubious morality. And I believe Rebecca Taylor can give us some examples of that.
Exactly, Tom. Rebecca Taylor is a technologist in molecular biology as well as a practicing Catholic. She operates the blog Mary Meets Dolly, a Catholic's guide to genetics, genetic engineering, and biotechnology. And recently, Rebecca authored a column for the National Catholic Register titled Morally Tainted Products, Products Made Possible by the Killing of Innocent Human Life. She's joining us today to talk about that article. Rebecca, thank you for joining us today on Register Radio.
Thank you very much for having me. And that was a very difficult piece to write. It's a very sensitive topic, and it gets people very upset, understandably.
Yeah, it's a very, very sensitive topic. And what I want to do, first of all, Rebecca, is can you give us an idea in layman's terms what it means that there are companies using cells and tissues from aborted human beings to test or develop various chemicals, drugs, or therapies? It sounds so science fiction-like that I think our listeners need an explanation, especially for those of us who are not science majors. So just help us to understand what it is that's happening.
Well, a huge tool in biotechnology and in labs in general is something we call a cell line. And basically a cell line is just a group of a certain kind of cell that continues to grow and divide in the lab. So the laboratory is keeping those cells alive and just continue to grow and grow and divide. And basically some of these cell lines have been growing for decades. You know, they're keeping these cell lines alive. And scientists get cell lines that start a cell line from many different places. You know, they've gotten them from adults, from children, from umbilical cords, even from cancer tumors. But some cell lines have been started from the various tissues of aborted fetuses. And these aborted fetal cell lines are being used in a multitude of ways. Some actually are being injected directly into patients, kind of attempting to cure what is mostly a nervous system disease, like spinal cord injury or stroke or Lou Gehrig's disease. Some are being used to grow vaccines that we use for measles, mumps, rubella, polio, I think the chickenpox. Some cell lines are being used to test certain chemicals for possible use. So what scientists are doing is that they have a chemical they think will be a great drug or have a certain effect, and they just test that on the cells to see which ones the cells respond to. And then they kind of identify those as possible candidates for drugs or whatever, and then they continue on with, like, say, human testing on those particular compounds. So they're using them as kind of a way to screen possible new drugs or chemicals or flavor enhancers or whatever.
Could you provide some examples of companies and or products that currently are you probably utilizing these cells or tissues from aborted babies?
Well, there's one company called NeuroStem. They're in Maryland. They have a stem cell line that came from an electively aborted fetus. They have announced that they, in I think it was in 2008 or a few years ago, and announced that they had injected those directly into the spinal cord of a man with ALS, which is also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. And actually, just a few weeks ago, NeuralStem announced that it discovered a new drug to treat depression. And what they had done was do that testing process where they had, you know, taken these neural stem cells and tested which drugs could possibly treat depression by seeing which cells responded. And then they now have approval from the FDA to start testing that drug that they discovered in humans. So they're not really very upfront about which stem cell line they used for that, whether that came from the aborted fetal cell, but it's very likely that it was the same stem cell line. Then there is Reneuron, which is a UK company that wants to use stem cells from aborted fetuses to treat stroke, and they've actually applied for trials in the United States. There is Neocutis, a San Francisco company that sells cosmetic and dermatological products that came from the skin of an aborted fetus. Those products are mostly sold through dermatologists, but they are called PSP, processed skin cell proteins, and they have an array of products that they sell. And then there are the vaccine makers, Merck, GlaxoSmithKline. You know, there's been a lot already in the news about this. They use cell lines called MRC5 and WI38, which are stem cell lines that came from electively aborted fetuses in the 60s. So, you know, this is something that happened, you know, decades ago, and these lines have been, you know, kept going for decades. And these manufacturers are using them to produce vaccines that we use. And then the one that's really in the news right now, thanks to Children of God for Life, is the Cenemex, which is the company that is testing flavor enhancers with a cell line that came from an aborted fetus.
I want to ask you a little bit more about that one, because it's Pepsi, Nestle, Kraft have a contract with this company. Well, what does that mean, testing flavor enhancers? Just help explain that to us.
There is a lot of confusion on this particular issue, so I really want to be clear to your listeners. This is, you know, the fact that Pepsi, Nestle, Kraft work with Cenemex to test flavor enhancers does not mean that there's aborted fetal tissue in the food that these companies produce. That's not what's happening. Cenemex is a company that uses the cell line ATK293. They use that cell line. It's a very common cell line, actually, all over biotechnology, and it was taken from the kidney tissue of a baby aborted in the 70s. It's been genetically altered or engineered with viral DNA, and it's basically sold, you know, from common chemical supply companies. And basically, Cenemex has gotten ATK293 to produce a protein that we use in our sense of taste, and so they're using these cells to test chemicals that could act as flavor enhancers to kind of replace salt and sugar, and then they will identify compounds that might work and then go on and test those further. So it's not like aborted fetal tissue is in the food. They're just using this cell line that's actually, you know, ubiquitous in the biotechnology arena to test possible flavor enhancers, to identify them, and then move forward with those.
I want to remind listeners that you're listening to Register Radio, and we are talking with Rebecca Taylor, who's a technologist in molecular biology, about her recent article on morally tainted products. Just hearing you describe this, Rebecca, I mean, it really, there's aspects of it that, you know, make my stomach turn. And I'm just wondering, what should be our response as Catholics, you know, morally, what should be our response to this, what's going on?
Well, first, we do have to be morally outraged. I mean, that we can't just say, well, this occurred long ago, it's entrenched kind of in the industry, so we just have to live with it. We can't do that. We also can't become hysterical either and start, not vaccinating our children if that's what we want to do. See, most of the cell lines that I've already discussed are years, even decades old, and so that doesn't mean the practice is okay, but it doesn't mean that, it usually means that no new abortions need to happen to keep these cell lines going. So what we're required to do for life-saving treatments, it's, for example, the vaccines for measles, mumps, rubella that are grown in these cell lines, you know, we need to object. We need to say, you know, to the doctor, to the company, and to the FDA, we want an alternative. You know, and if there isn't an alternative, we need to say loudly that we don't want to use this product. We're going to use it because you don't have an alternative, but we really want you to come up with one. And some of these vaccines do have alternatives available, alternative cell lines available that can be used. Unfortunately, the FDA hasn't approved all of them, so, you know, it's a tough one, but we have to keep pushing.
And is there any kind of labeling that is required for any of these products? We have labeling for everything else.
Yeah, we don't have any labeling. And that's what I argued for in the piece. And I didn't know about this at the time I wrote it. I really wish I had, because I would have put it in. Children of God for Life, who exposed Cenemax and Neocutis, has already proposed legislation for Congress that would require the labeling of vaccines and other products. They call it the Free Labeling and Informed Consent Act, or FLICA for short. And it would require labels and product inserts on vaccines, drugs, and any other products where aborted fetal cells were used in the development or production. And this is exactly what we need. Because for us to object as Catholics to these products, we really have to know about it. And it's really hard to get the companies to admit or to find the information, which is what really Children of God for Life is really good at. They're really good at finding out what these companies are using and what they're using them for. And so we really need to know about it. And so required labeling would actually go a long way in letting us vote with our wallets, essentially, you know, show our moral outrage by just knowing what's going on. And also, you know, there's a lot of parents that have told me that they, when they walk into the doctor's office and tell the doctor that those vaccines were made in aborted fetal cell lines, the doctor just laughs them out of the office as if it's that it isn't true.
Yeah.
And that's really disturbing, because it means that our medical professionals, a lot of them don't know what's going on, so the labeling would really help with that as well. So if you're, you know, if you, I really believe legislation for labeling is important. So if you do as well, you need to contact your congressman about this FLICA legislation. You can go to the website of Children of God for Life at www.cogforlife.org, and they have a link to their Free Labeling and Informed Consent Act right on their homepage, and you can, there's instructions on how to let your congressman know that this legislation exists and that you would like them to implement that.
Rebecca, I want to point readers to your article at the National Catholic Register, as well as your blog, Mary Meets Dolly, as well as the website you just mentioned, Children of God for Life. Thank you so much, Rebecca, for coming on Register Radio and talking about this very difficult subject.
Yes, it is. It's very upsetting for me as well. But thank you for having me.
My thanks as well, Rebecca. When we return, Stephen Gray Donis talks about some new family films out there. Now, wait a minute. Family films? What's that? Are they even still being made? Well, the answer is, I'm not going to give it away. You'll find out in 60 seconds. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
It's fun.
It's free.
It's Wings, EWTN's weekly e-newsletter delivered to your inbox free each week. Read about upcoming special programming.
And learn what's new at EWTN, radio, TV, and internet.
Just send an email to radio@EWTN.com.
Be sure to put Wings in the subject line.
Wings, a free service from your friends at the Global Catholic Network, EWTN.
If it's happening at the Vatican, the United States, or anywhere else in the world, look to EWTN News for live coverage of landmark events in the life of the Church. From today's headlines to compelling interviews with Catholic newsmakers, EWTN News, only on the Global Catholic Network.
Are you concerned about the way our nation and our world are heading? Are you looking for the truth behind the issues of the day? Do you need support in standing up for life, the family, and our Catholic faith? Then join well-informed Catholics worldwide who depend on the National Catholic Register to address the most compelling questions of our time. Now part of the EWTN family of services, the Register is a trusted source of news and views with an unwavering fidelity to the Pope and the Magisterium. Get the in-depth analysis you need explaining what happened and why it matters for Catholics who engage in the culture to serve Christ. To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner, or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Tim Drake, I'm Tom Price. Tim, we are again delighted to welcome Stephen Gray Donis back to Register Radio, especially after that first segment, Tim. I got to tell you, because as we're talking about morally tainted products and using aborted fetal stem cells for flavor enhancers, the only movie I could think of there was Soylent Green, and hopefully we can get a little bit beyond that and talk about family films. So, Tim, delighted once again to bring on Stephen Gray Donis.
Yes, we're always pleased to have Stephen with us. Stephen serves as the National Catholic Register's film critic, and he's a frequent guest on Register Radio. Today he'll be talking with us about some new family films, The Lorax, The Secret World of Ariete, and the general difficulty in finding favorable family films. Stephen, thanks for joining us again today on Register Radio.
Tim, it's great to be with you.
Stephen, recently you penned one of your creative rhyming reviews of The Lorax for the National Catholic Register, and I'm wondering, for those of us who have enjoyed reading that book to our children, how does the film compare?
Well, it is a tradition, something that I've done for 12 years now, almost since I started Decent Films in the year 2000. The Grinch movie came out, and I came out of the theater so disgusted, I felt the need to critique the movie in Dr. Seuss's own voice, or as near a facsimile as I could manage. So I wrote a review of The Grinch in rhyming verse. I've done the same for The Cat in the Hat, and Horton Hears a Who, which is the one film in the series that I've actually liked. The Grinch comes from the fledgling animation team that produced Despicable Me a couple of years ago. It's a nice little film. It's a nice start, an encouraging start for a new animation house. But unfortunately, I think they bit off more than they can chew. I can read you an excerpt from my rhyming review if you'd like to hear it.
Yes, do that.
Okay, so this is an excerpt. You can read the full thing at ncregister.com. So, it's hearts in the right place. Give the filmmakers that. This isn't The Grinch or The Cat in the Hat. It's not outright ugly, though it slips off the rails. It wants to be decent. It tries, but it fails. It starts out in Sneedville, all plastic and new, where nobody thinks about cloppity goo or smogulous smoke and where it all goes. What's outside the city walls, nobody knows. So far, it's not half bad, but right when the plot catches up with the book, it goes south on the spot. The strange, spooky mood of the fable is tossed. The Onceler's aura of mystery is lost. And they've whitewashed his backstory. The old Onceler's shame is expunged as we learn he was never to blame for the sad state of things. He chopped down just one tree. The real villains, it seems, are his bad family. There's no sense of pacing or of rising action. The book's key events suffer major contraction. In one brief montage, the trees are all down. The sky's choked with smog, the water's deep brown. The rest of the tale is formula pap, evil company led by a villainous chap. It could have been worse. How much worse it could be. But is that enough? Not for my kids and me. It's no Despicable Me, sad to say. Perhaps someone should lift this Lorax away.
It's great. It's the first time we've had poetry on Register Radio, so thank you for that, Stephen. I understand that that a nun actually makes an appearance in the film. Is that correct?
Yeah, there are a couple of brief depictions of religion as part of the kind of consumerist, suburban, happy-go-lucky, see-no-evil, hear-no-evil world of Sneedville. In the opening song, as we see the Sneedvilleites singing and dancing about their happy consumerist lives, there's a brief moment where they offer a prayer in thanks to the Lord for all that they have, and then that prayer is mocked as it's turned into part of just their consumer culture. And in the middle of the movie, there's a song in which the people come happily to buy the Onceler's Thneeds, and they're singing and dancing about how wonderful the Thneeds are. And dancing in the midst of them is a nun who, like, leaps over the crowd and so forth, and we see her, you know, embracing the Thneeds along with everything else. It's not a terribly negative picture, and she's only there for a couple of seconds of screen time, but still, it's a slur, I think, that just left a slight bad taste in my mouth.
Well, I think our family will probably take a pass on that film. I want to remind listeners that we're talking with Stephen Greidanis, who is the National Catholic Register's film critic. You also wrote about another recent release for families that's probably better than The Lorax, and that's The Secret World of Ariete, which is loosely based on the children's book The Borrowers. Can you tell us a little bit about that film?
Sure. I took my whole family to see The Secret World of Ariete the weekend that it opened, and we went with friends of ours from church, another family of eight, so that were 16 of us in all, plus my cousin. And we all had a blast. We really enjoyed it. It's a movie very far outside of the Hollywood mainstream. It is an animated adaptation of The Borrowers' stories of Mary Norton. Some listeners may also be familiar with The Littles. These are similar series of books about tiny people who live in the secret spaces of big people's homes, under the floorboards and in the walls and such. And Ariete is the heroine of this story. Her father, Pod, is a borrower, which means he makes his living by taking little things from the big people, things that are either lost or that are so small that they'll never miss it. And in the course of the story, a boy comes to stay at the house who spots Ariete and winds up making friends with her. It's a very sweet, gentle story. It's a story that's not fueled by a lot of fast-paced gags and pop culture references and crude humor, which is unfortunately par for the course for so much of American Hollywood family entertainment, even in some cases some of the better stuff.
And this film is from one of your favorite animated filmmakers, correct?
Yes, that's right. The story was written, or it was adapted for the screen, by Hayao Miyazaki, who is, in the world of global animation, he's right up there with Walt Disney and John Lasseter. Americans may know him best from movies like Spirited Away, My Neighbor Totoro, and Ponyo. This is a style and a Studio Ghibli, that is still lesser known in the United States. Some of their work is a little on the weird side. It's a little hard to, it's not as accessible to Americans as some of their other stuff. But The Secret World of Ariete is Studio Ghibli at their most gentle and their most accessible. This is a movie that you can take your little kids to, 5, 6, 7. You can take their grandparents and everyone will love it. It's particularly just visually dazzling just to watch the borrowers negotiate their world and the way that they've used ordinary everyday objects from our world in their miniature-sized world. The painting of the background is so beautiful, and the Japanese animators pay such attention to what everything looks like. Every plant is a real species. Every aspect of architecture and all of the household objects, everything looks exactly like what it looks like in the real world. And just to watch Ariete walk through a kitchen cupboard and to see her walk past glassware on a shelf without any dialogue even, it's absolutely beautiful.
And we just have less than a minute left, so I just want to wrap up by saying, why is it so difficult for families to find, you know, sort of appropriate family fare, do you think, Stephen?
I think that the whole culture of family entertainment has been fundamentally lost in Hollywood. What Hollywood produces today is kiddie movies, and then they compensate to try to make it up to the grown-ups by throwing in crude humor and pop culture references. Mm-hmm. Filmmakers today don't target the family as a whole. They're not trying to make movies that grown-ups and children can watch together. I think that that's really tragic. Pixar is one of the few studios doing it, and Studio Ghibli is also doing it in Japan. I hope that Catholic audiences will take the trouble to discover their work.
All right. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us again on Register Radio. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Always great to be here, Tim.
My thanks to you as well, Stephen, and to you too, Tim. I know that you are a featured blogger on ncregister.com along with Stephen. Is there anything we should be looking for these days?
Oh, yes. There's a piece up there currently that is burning up the internet called The Contraception Inception Deception. It uses the film Inception to teach a little bit about the contraceptive issue.
Wow. We will definitely be looking for that. And before we wrap up the show, EWTN wants to welcome our brand new radio affiliate, number 180. It's KCEO 1000 AM in San Diego. Want to thank Doug Sherman, Dick Jenkins, everybody at Immaculate Heart Radio, and also San Diego Catholic Radio helping to make this brand new EWTN radio affiliate a reality. It is the 17th rated radio market in the United States. So hello to everybody hearing us for the first time in San Diego on KCEO. And thank you all for joining us this time on Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
The Potawatomi Indians called her the woman who prays always, and they were absolutely correct. I'm Father Charles Connor, and this is The Church in Time. Rose Philippine Duchesne was born in Grenoble, France, and educated by the Visitation Nuns. She entered the newly formed Society of the Sacred Heart, established a convent of her order in Paris, and then decided she wanted to work in the missions. She came to the mission lands of Missouri, first to St. Charles, and then to Florissant, where she would spend many years. By 1828, she had established six foundations of her community along the Mississippi River. At the age of 71, she gave up administration and went to Sugar Creek, Kansas, where she taught Potawatomi Indian children. She taught them the catechism clearly and unambiguously. She taught them the rudiments of reading and writing. She taught them all they would need for successful living in the newly emerging United States. None of which was hard to understand for a woman who prayed always. And this has been The Church in Time.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.